case, which is Trinity Evangelical Lutheran Church versus Peoria. Mr. Lewis. Yes, Mr. Lewis, you can proceed.
May it please the Court, Paul Lewis on behalf of Trinity Evangelical Lutheran Church. This is yet another Arlupa case. This one is unusual for several factors. First, it tests the application of zone preservation regulations rather than zoning. That's very important here because, unlike Euclidean zoning, preservation regulations are selectively applied and not generally applicable. Second, they involve a burden imposed by the public body rather than a benefit sought by the body. That is, the church is not coming in looking for a special use permit or some kind of benefit from the city. The landmarking is imposed upon the church and carries with it affirmative duties to care for.
Well, what is the basis for thinking that they wouldn't have done the same thing wherever this building was? Connected to a church, not connected, right?
At the inception of the action, if we go back to the year that the landmarking occurred, 2000, on this record, you see the notes from the church retreat in the summer of 2000. The church at that time owned three apartment buildings, which it had accumulated over the years on the block. Once it had all three, it was ready to tear those down to be able to move forward with additional buildings and have the land to do the parking and the detention and the setbacks and all the other things you need. The church was allowed to tear down two. The third got landmarked. So at the inception...
Well, who instituted the landmarking of that building?
A neighborhood association that is a landmark district about two blocks away from the building, the Randolph-Roanoke Residential Association. And on this record, they did so.
This took place after the church bought the building, as I understand.
That long after the church bought the building. At the time the church bought the building, with the intention of expanding and trying to acquire the entire block, because it's a landlocked church, over a period of years they acquired the properties necessary to do this, and it was only when
this group object to the church's use of the building before they went through the landmarking process?
No.
You know, there are likely some very unique churches in Peoria that would qualify as landmarks under anyone's standards. If a religious group owning a landmark church decided that it wanted to appeal more to youth and wanted to take down a landmark building to put up a youth center with, let's say, you know, bowling alleys, a dance, that sort of thing. Is there any way the city can block that, or would you argue that a church can do anything it wants with its land?
Are we assuming a church in which the sanctuary and existing buildings have been landmarked with the consent of the church, or are we assuming one as here where it was landmarked over the objections of the church?
Right.
You know, here it was over our objection.
But that's Judge Rovner's question. Is it your view that a church can do anything it wants with its facades and is immune from landmark enforcement?
Not automatically so. That depends on the facts of the case, as most
that's
of these
not
are facts.
Satisfactory answer.
There is no blanket immunity. We would say that it is always going to be a limitation, either a substantial burden or an unreasonable limitation, or both, in a church context, to have the facade controlled by a landmarking.
But why? But what is there about churches that should make their give them greater powers of resistance to landmark alterations, landmark rulings than any other owner of property.
Why should churches using a religious property be exempt, for example? And I think the discussion by the California Supreme Court in the East Asian Bay case gets at several of those. One is that unlike for-profit entities, churches are not able to take advantage of things like tax credits to maintain those facades. You have a burden, but you don't have the offsetting benefits that would otherwise accrue to a for-profit owner. And so
they have a tax exemption.
They do have a tax exemption.
Well, you know, I don't understand you. And, of course, there are a lot of other nonprofit property owners, you know, like universities. They have a tax exemption, but, of course, that means if you have a tax exemption, you don't get tax breaks. That doesn't mean you're discriminated against because you don't get tax breaks.
But in this case, you have
universities couldn't, I'm sure, claim some immunity from landmark laws.
Certainly not under
our... So there's a church and a university.
A couple of things. One is that a church has a mission, which, well, of course, universities usually do too if they are not for-profit universities. But the church is allowed, as a matter of First Amendment protection, free exercise protection, should be allowed to determine what its mission is and what the measure of success of that mission is. And that may include a number of things, including...
But that's just too broad. That's much too broad. Because then they could resist any kind of regulation, right? Like minimum wage. Forget about the religious personnel. But if you have to pay minimum wages to the people who clean the church, well, that impedes your mission. Increases your labor costs.
Minimum wage is a neutral law of general applicability. The landmark
is not. Landmark laws, they're neutral and they're of general applicability.
No, they're selectively applicable.
No, they're not. Look, if this building were anywhere else, it still would be given landmark status. So what's the non-neutrality in a landmark law?
Well, again, taking the example of Euclidean zoning, you have a zone for everything. You step into a zone knowing that you have to get a special use permit to get a church, and you know what you have to do. When you step into this one, you don't know what you have to do. You don't know what your facade has to look like. You don't know what the restrictions will be because they are case by case and they are individual. And again, the church owned three apartment buildings on the same block with the same zoning, bought for the same purpose. Two were allowed to get torn down. The third one, they were required to maintain.
But that's the same situation that any landowner is in.
But a landowner in a private setting or a for-profit setting does not have the protection of the First Amendment.
For-profit, because we have non-profit building owners that are subject to landmark law.
The difference is the First Amendment. Or to say it another way, what is the exercise of religion that is limited by this action? The exercise of religion, this is a Great Commission church. That means you go out and you bring people in. A church of attraction in current church speak, that is Dr. Hunter's analysis. In classic Christian metaphor, that means that your property and your buildings are your fishnet that you go out to fish for people with. What the landmarking does here, because it restricts the use of the building to apartment or residential use, cuts a hole in that fishnet. It keeps the church from performing its mission. And whether we look at that under the club standard and say, what religious use can the church make of this building? The answer is none, unless it's in the residential or apartment business, which it is not.
Mr. Lewis, I don't know if I missed this, but were the other two apartment buildings of the same style and same year, etc.?
The record does not directly show that. What the record reflects, and this would be the attachments to the exhibit of, or to the deposition of Randy Neff, the PowerPoint presentation, again, from the summer of 2007, which is when the landmarking application was filed, but when the church was tearing it down, there's a depiction showing the block, which is a triangular block that the church is on. The two apartment buildings on North Avenue that got torn down, the apartment building on Hamilton, which got landmarked. Were they identical? I think preservation with people would say that every building is unique. If it's not in an architectural style, then it's either eclectic or vernacular and therefore deserving of attention. When you look at the Hannah and Maraca case that tests a very similar ordinance in the city of Chicago and finds it wanting, essentially anything can be landmarked. You have 9 possible standards. You only have to hit one. Any building can be landmarked, which again is one of those major distinctions between Euclidean zoning and special use permits, which may have a structured set of requirements, both procedurally and substantively, and landmarking, where it's, we look at that building and, gee, we like it. What are you going to do with it? In this case, it restricts the use. If we were talking solely about restricting the appearance of the building, this case might come out differently. But our LUPA protects religious land use.
What is this building having in common with this zone of what's nearby that has been talked about? There's a zone. You said this group was interested in this architectural zone of some sort.
There's an historic district. Actually, there are historic districts a block or two away, both to the north and to the south.
What's it got in common with that?
Well, we say it doesn't. Those are residential districts, and when you look at the evidence in this record about the comprehensive plan, the future land use plan for this block is office, which would exclude any residential use, even under a special use permit. And the land all to the east and south, east and southeast, is all institutional, actually not-for-profit institutional, Methodist Medical Center and so forth. So this block is, in the city comprehensive plan, is intended to be office and not residential. And what's maintained is the sore thumb of one apartment building. So on the use side of this, nothing in common with the residential areas a block or two away at all. See that I'm on yellow, which means unless there are more questions, I should wrap up quickly.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. Well, why don't you reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Thank you.
Mr. Ray?
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Randall Ray for the City of Peoria. This case is not New Berlin, not St. Constantine versus New Berlin, nor is it Westchester Day School, the second.
Can you speak up? I can't hear you.
Yes, thank you.
You could raise that, you know.
It is not. Thank you. It is not Westchester Day School. It is not.
Be more comfortable if it's higher. Great, thank you.
Thank you. This case is not St. Constantine versus New Berlin, and it is not Westchester Day School, the Second Circuit case that's been cited here. There is no showing that the city of Peoria has imposed any burden on this church, nor do we wish to.
Can a neighborhood group in Peoria ask the Trinity Church itself, that is, in other words, the main church building, be declared a landmark property? In other words, can a church lose control over the use and development of its main religious building under this ordinance?
The answer to that is that the ordinance does not have a specific exclusion for church buildings. We're off the record now. This is not this was an apartment building when they bought it. It is an accessory use. The fact is there are no church buildings in Peoria that have been landmarked against their wishes,
but I'm looking ahead. I'm just wondering about, you know, this ordinance, and could a church lose control under this ordinance?
I guess the answer would be it's not impossible, but it's never happened. It's been the only church building that was ever sought to be landmarked involved a move, and the landmarking was denied. So This is not a case where the city has been so invasive into the affairs of its churches that it becomes difficult to locate or expand religious institutions within the city of Peoria.
What if the landmark ordinance was applied to the church itself rather than to this outbuilding? I mean, what if the church had, maybe they had sculptures on their facade of the torments of the damned or something like that, and the church decided that was sort of old-fashioned, and they'd like to have a kindlier facade. They didn't want to frighten people that much, so they decide to remove the sculpture. Could the ordinance be used to prevent that?
There are two questions there. One is, could it be landmarked? And again, we've admitted that the ordinance does not specifically preclude the church being landmarked. But then the question is, could the religious symbolism change be denied in the process of a certificate of appropriateness? And I would suggest that that's why we have RLUIPA. My answer to that would be no. And again, this whole notion of landmarking is and has been held to be a generally applicable law, and that's the St. Bartholomew's case, and it's not a taking, and that's the Penn Central case. And the
how is the complete inability of Trinity to use that property for religious purposes not a substantial burden? I mean, now they're saddled with this property that is not economically viable as a residential building, and yet under the landmark ordinance, it has to remain residential.
The landmark ordinance does not limit uses. It limits how you can change the exterior of the building. The church has never been told by the city that it cannot use this building for religious purposes. The church has chosen not to use this building for religious purposes. The landmarking and the certificate of appropriateness only comes up when you want to alter the building. They have never sought to alter the building. They have only sought to demolish the building. And the only reason they've given for demolishing the building is to expand the church. We don't think on the record that the church shows that it is not a vibrant, functioning, fully functioning church with the property it has. As with any of our institutions, we're fine with letting them expand. We think they can expand.
Well, I am correct. Did you indicate that the building has to be used for residential purposes? Is that correct?
We have never said that the building has to be used for residential purposes. Currently, it's zoned residential, but there's no reason they couldn't get a special use permit to use it for religious purposes or any other reasonable reuse. And we also do not believe that the entire economic value of this property is worthless. On the record, the church voted not to sell this property in 2004. Why did they take that vote? Well, somebody else thought there was some economic viability to it. And we're not here to tell the church what it has to do. They didn't have to sell. But they can't then turn around and say, well, this building has no economic viability. They operated it as an apartment building for 17 years, and they chose to stop operating it as an apartment building, and they're free to operate it for what use they want. But they have never sought any reuse of the building or modification of the building. They've sought only the demolition of the building. This case is different from New Berlin. There is no basis on which in this record to show that the denial of the demolition had any anti-religious bias. This is not a case where the specific issue was what they were going to build. They showed what they would build if they were allowed to demolish, but all they asked for was to demolish it. And again, they haven't shown what the problem is with the current church. It's a nice church. It's a beautiful church. It's a functioning church. They have everything they need.
That's your view.
Well,
they think they need a lot more, obviously.
Well, I think every church would like to have more, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the on the record, they have to show it's a substantial burden, and what they've shown is that the Kinder Music program, which is thriving in the present church, has to share space with the choir, and there are file cabinets in the room as well as a piano, and that would be better if there were nothing else in the room, and that the configuration requires them to serve milk and cookies in a hallway instead of in a proper waiting room. And these are not exactly the kind of things that show true inadequacy. But notwithstanding that, the city has never said, church, you cannot expand. The city, in fact, hired an architect to show that it was feasible to expand on the property between this apartment building and the church, not telling them what to build, but just to show that it was feasible. Having said that, now we do get to the New Berlin St. Constantine case. We are cognizant that, having said that, to use a term I heard earlier this morning, we can't yank them around. If they do decide to do that, we will have to be reasonable. And we think that's what the New Berlin case says. And we will be reasonable. By the same token, the church would have to be reasonable in what it requested to do with that particular parcel. But I think that, again, the church has never asked to do anything with this. They've never asked to modify the apartment building. Nor have they availed themselves of the hardship provision in our landmark ordinance to say that they are spending so much money maintaining this building that it is substantially burdening their religious exercise. They made no effort to do this on a hardship basis. Their effort was to say, we want to build this 12,000 square foot addition, and we want to tear this building down in order to do it. And if in fact they can build a 12,000 foot addition without tearing down this landmark, then it really becomes largely irrelevant to all the features of the city landmark ordinance. The question here is the burden on the religion is the inability to expand, and we think they have the ability to expand. We know they have the ability to expand.
Is this a mainline church or some sort of breakaway from the Lutherans or what?
I'll answer it this way. To my knowledge, it's the biggest Lutheran church in Peoria. It's the downtown Lutheran church. I certainly don't think that they're a discriminated against group, or at least not for the last.
Well, that's what I'm concerned because a lot of our cases have involved, like the previous case, involved small or new or fringe religions where there's some concern about discrimination.
And this is not that case. This is, again, a vibrant, large, functioning church. It's an asset to the community. I have no problem standing in front of you and saying that. This has not come forward as a basis on the basis that the city filed some kind of a harassing lawsuit. This comes forward because they have asked for only one thing, and that's to demolish this building. If they came forward and asked to expand their church, we would consider their application in the full light of the Religious Land Use and Institutional Institutionalized Persons Act.
But where would they expand it to?
Oops, sorry.
They would first of all, they own a fair bit of real estate. It's already been mentioned that they tore down two other apartment buildings. We've vacated an alley on their block. They have expanded this church in 1996. They can expand it where they want. We've suggested they expand it in a 50 by 80 foot parcel that's between the church building and this apartment building.
Is it landmarked on the basis of the testimony of this professor that you have an affidavit?
The landmarking was done on the basis that was an after the fact. The landmarking happened in 2000, ironically, and nobody knew that this was coming, but it was just a few months before the RLUIPA was passed. But the landmarking was done at the instance of of the neighborhood group, which I do not believe the record reflects. The historic district was a couple blocks away. I believe it reflects that it's across the street. But notwithstanding that, it was done at the on the neighborhood's request, and it was followed through. The church did object. The church has not filed anything since then. That happened in 2000. The only issue before the court is not the landmarking of this apartment building, which was the use at the time that it was landmarked. The issue before the court is the denial of the certificate of appropriateness to demolish it. And again, this case, again, drawing comparisons with New Berlin and Westchester Day, this is their first crack at it. And as Westchester Day said, a conditional denial, rejection of a submitted plan while leaving open the possibility of approval of a resubmission with modifications designed to address the cited problems is less likely to constitute a substantial burden than definitive rejection of the same plan, ruling out the possibility of approval of a modified proposal. That's where we are in this case. There has been no modified plan. I understand that the church would like to demolish this building, but that it is not the only way to expand, and we don't believe that our LUPA provides that a church can expand any way it wants. We don't think that it necessarily means that a church can expand any time it wants, but in this case, we have no particular problem with them expanding if they do it in a reasonable way, and would be happy to work with them. Again, there has been no showing that the religious exercise of this church has been hampered in any way by any action of the city, and again, we stand ready and willing. If they want to expand, there's ways for them to expand. The only thing that they cannot do is demolish this building. If they want to submit plans, and I don't think it's appropriate under our LUPA, and I don't think the cases support that they can say, oh, that would have been fruitless. They would have turned down our proposal to refigure this building. There's no basis for that. I think under our LUPA, you have to give it a shot and see what happens. You can't just assume that the city has this anti-religious bias and assume that it won't pass anyway, so that we'll just go to court and argue the demolition.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ray. So, Mr. Lewis, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
An insufficient time to deal with all the interesting aspects of the record, but sufficient to touch on three or four of the major ones. Judge Rosner asked the question of whether churches are vulnerable in the city of Peoria. On this record, in the deposition of Pat Landis, the city's planning and development director, there are attached the minutes of a preservation commission meeting. Those appear at 556 of the record. In those minutes, the preservation commission voted to landmark the Unitarian Universalist Church in Peoria, which subsequently was torn down about two blocks from where Trinity is, and it's occupied now by a Methodist Medical Center. And you'll see the plans for Medical Center, which are also in this record. Along with those minutes is a list of target properties, which includes numerous churches as AA target properties for preservation, and the remarks by one of the Preservation Commission members, not a vote of the commission, but Mrs. Vega, the wife of Mr. Vega, who was the president of the association that filed the landmarking application, to the effect that the Preservation Commission really ought to look at being proactive to landmark churches and schools in the city. That starts at 556 of the record. The question of whether the preservation ordinance limits uses, because our LUPA protects land use. It doesn't protect belief, and it doesn't necessarily protect facade, but it does protect uses. And if you look at, and again, page 142 to 146 of the record, the certificate of appropriateness procedures are actually very stringent. The Preservation Commission may only approve a certificate of appropriateness that alters the building, including its interior structural members or its shrubbery, more than 20%, if it finds that the application for the certificate clearly meets all of the criteria in the ordinance, as well as is clearly appropriate for the building itself, it meets the purposes of the ordinance, and so forth. The first criterion is that a change to the building should not be allowed, or should only be allowed, if it is the original intended use or a compatible use which requires the least alteration. In their answers to interrogatories, the city identified what that is as apartment slash residential use. The application of the ordinance, if the Preservation Commission follows its own ordinance, will reject an attempt to change the use to something besides residential or apartment, at least if it involves any modification of the building whatsoever. This ordinance does, both as applied and on its face, limit the use of the building, and the trial court so found. So we disagree with that. But at the end of the day, the real question here, who is entitled to set the mission and set the measure of the mission of the church? The mission of the church is not Sunday morning corporate worship.
Mr. Ray says you have space to build a substitute for this building.
Two problems with that. Consideration of alternatives are in the nature of an affirmative defense, at least under substantial burden. Maybe not under unreasonable limits, but under substantial burden. And there are a couple of problems with that. One is the church looked at that when Fulvio Zerla asked, what can you do? And the church rejected that. The line drawings that show what the church would have to give up with the building, what it would have left, and whether it could still manage to get the parking and the detention and so forth in, don't work. The second is that the building drawn by the city's expert witness, he freely admitted he had not looked at things like setbacks and so forth that you would have to comply with. He also did not look at church ministry, program and ministry. And on this record, the program and ministry includes a variety of things that could not well be accommodated in a vertical building.
Well, Mr. Ray has as much as said the city would make accommodations to enable you to expand. Anyway, we'll have to stop now. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So thank you to both counsel.